It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A harmful narrative about Black fathers portrays them as absent from their children's lives. The Black father stereotype has persisted for generations. The consequences of this bias can be bad for families.
Clinical psychologist Elvin Thomas sees the opposite in his research interviewing dads, and he tries to root out the myths.
Thomas co-chaired a recent event called Fathers in Focus. It brought together researchers and parents to talk about difficult issues in families.
Elvin Thomas is an associate professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UW-Madison. He founded the Black Fatherhood Podcast, and his research focuses on fatherhood and adolescent outcomes. Elvin, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much, Kit. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Let's talk about Fathers in Focus and the issues fathers are facing. What did attendees of the conference learn about fatherhood?
So it was really exciting to have this conference. We've been talking about it for about 2 years now. And to finally be able to have 250 fathers and those who will be fathers in that space to talk about a range of issues that fathers had kind of told us about from the year before. So this year we talked about co-parenting, the relationship and parenting skill building, child support and finances, custody challenges, mental health, justice involved fathers. We even had something on developing healthy relationships with your money. So around budgeting and planning and saving.
So many different issues that ultimately affect the family, ultimately affect children. You talked about how fathers and mothers experience chronic stress and that it really can deplete their motivation to connect with the child. Can you talk about some of these issues and what you touched on there at the conference about what the spiral is like?
So the beautiful thing about the conference was that myself and my co-host, Dr. Daniel Harrison Green from the UW-Madison Extension, we didn't do much of the talking. We had persons from the community come in to do the talking. What we do know, though, from my work and from the work of a lot of other researchers with regard to mental health and just health in general and its effect on child-parent attachment, parenting in general, and just the health of the family and the individuals who form part of that family system, is that when one part of the family system, as with any other system, is not functioning, is not feeling good, is not healthy, is not having its needs met, the entire system is thrown off. And the most vulnerable members of the system end up suffering most, which means, of course, the children suffer most acutely when fathers aren't either receiving the services that they need, aren't receiving the help that they need, or aren't doing as well as they would like to be doing as men first and in their fathering role. So we know that if the parent relationship is not a very strong one or not a very healthy one, that more likely than not, the attachment between the child and the father is going to be compromised, which of course will lead to potential negative outcomes for the child, but also for the dad.
When you talk about issues like co-parenting and custody and financial issues and justice involved, are there certain topics that are more difficult discussing with fathers who do need help or support?
I think that is on a case-by-case basis. So some fathers will have no issue discussing finances with you. For another father, that may be a very touchy topic, and it might take a little bit more skill to try to get a father to talk about that. A father might have no issues discussing parenting with you, and another father, because of their own parenting experiences, traumatic or otherwise, might find that a very touchy topic for them. So it's going into each interaction, either as a researcher or as a practitioner, going into each interaction, understanding that you don't know everything that's going to happen or can't predict everything that's going to happen. And you approach the person that you're dealing with as an individual and the system as an individual system rather than as a representative of some monolithic understanding of families or monolithic understanding of fathers or Black fathers in whatever the context might be. So you go into that specific situation and you have the individual tell you their story, the things that they feel comfortable talking with you about. As a clinical psychologist, my next step is once I have established trust, then I would probably launch into trying to either push them or challenge them on something that they've said, or push them to start to think about things in a different way, or think about something new. Maybe try addressing an issue that I think might be underlying, but that they may not that they may feel a bit reticent about discussing. And of course, do that really interesting dance where you're trying to push, but you're also being aware and sensitive to whether or not they're willing to be pushed and how far they'll be willing to go with that particular discussion. And sometimes it means that you broach the topic now and you will come back to it at some later point when the individual feels a little bit more comfortable talking with you or feels comfortable approaching that particular topic.
You know, when you talk about the narrative that we don't hear about fathers who are staying very involved with their children or are taking steps to really be a big part of the family unit long term, can you share any story or what you found there? Because we tend to focus on fathers who don't follow this path.
I think of one that I was seeing this 10-year-old boy for specific challenges that mom had brought him in for. And the parents were separated. Dad had recently returned from incarceration. I'd say a few months post-incarceration. Mom was having difficulties with the co-parenting relationship. Dad obviously had financial issues. He wasn't able to land a job because he would go in, interview for the job. It would be positive. And of course, then they do the background check and the response was usually, the position is filled, or we'll keep you on file and we'll call. And he knew what that meant. That meant that they found out that he had a criminal history, and that automatically made people feel a bit uncomfortable and they weren't willing to go beyond that. So the dad came in with the intention of being involved, even though mom did not want him involved in the therapy and mom was concerned about whether or not he wanted to be involved. So mom's response was, he won't come, he's not interested. But the dad showed up on his own and said, can I just talk with you? And I told mom I would call the dad. So I had mom's permission to speak with the dad. And I told her, yes, I'm going to speak with him. He's going to come in. We talked, and by the end of our session, dad was in tears and dad was saying, these are my challenges, financial and otherwise. And these are also my challenges, social and emotional, within the relationship with my child and my child's mother. And I'm trying also to battle the history. So my own experiences with my father and what that did to me and what I want to accomplish and all of that. And after about five to 10 sessions, dad and mom were now on the same page. The kid was doing significantly better. His younger sibling was also doing better. And they left my final session as a family. But it started with dad being willing, dad demonstrating that despite the narrative that Black fathers aren't interested or Black fathers aren't involved, and despite the significant hurdle of reintegrating at post-incarceration, that he was extremely interested and willing to go into the vulnerable spaces and willing to explore whatever needed to be explored, first, to help his child, but second, to strengthen his skills. Because one of the things that he said to me was, I don't know what to do with those soft things, talking about the emotionality, both his and his child's. I don't know what to do with those soft skills. And to me, as a clinician, that was my gift. He had given me a gift to say, this is the thing that I need help with. And I said, great, now that you've identified it, let's work on that.
We're talking with Elvin Thomas, an associate professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UW-Madison, recently held a conference called Fathers in Focus and looking more closely at the family unit and studying fatherhood itself. Your research has also looked into prenatal involvement and going through the pregnancy, which has dramatically changed for fathers since the 1950s, since decades ago. How has our understanding of fatherhood changed at that part of development?
There's a quote that I often will share from a very well-known physician. This quote was part of his response to an article written in the British Medical Journal. He calls the idea of fathers being in delivery rooms a fad. And he really bemoans how antithetical to birth and everything and family that is, and that that is not the place for a father. And he really lays into it. Today, I don't think we have many people left who would lay into fatherhood, especially in maternal spaces in that way. But that does not mean that the general idea of fathers not being welcomed in that space doesn't still exist. In fact, when we conducted, myself and my colleague from School of Social Work at UW-Madison, conducted a study with the African-American Breastfeeding Network in Milwaukee. And across the board, fathers were talking about their experiences in the prenatal spaces. And across the board, they were saying that one of the first challenges was that either they were never invited into the space, or when they did show up and imposed themselves or presented themselves in the space, there was no accommodation. So sometimes there would be no chair for them to sit on, so they would just stand in the corner. The screen on which they were looking at the fetal development and they were looking at the ultrasound was angled towards mom, which makes sense. It should be angled towards mom. But never once was it angled towards them to say, hey, dad, now that mom has seen what's going on, here, take a look. Here's what's going on. Here's what this means. Here's what that means. And so moms themselves were also saying that often they would have discussions with the fathers at home to say, here are our concerns. Here are the questions we will ask the doctor when we get there. And because in the room, they're so engaged with the physicality, they're hoping that their partners are going to be engaged. Hmm. But because the partners are not engaged, they leave often without those questions being answered, or having forgotten that they wanted to ask those questions because our physicians are not really engaging fathers.
We're going to turn our attention now to the presidential election and the themes that have revolved around parenthood. Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance has attacked people who don't have children and, you know, calling childless Americans more sociopathic and that they're making the country less mentally stable. What role do you see fathers and fatherhood having in this election cycle?
I wrote an op-ed recently. I think it's in, this one was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where it came out just around the time of the vice presidential debates. And I talked about the vice president candidate, Tim Walz, and of course, the second gentleman, and the important role that they could potentially play, both from the fact that they're men in these very highly politicized spaces, but also from the point of view of their own experiences as fathers and what that could mean for them as far as advocating for fatherhood-related concerns and advocating for heightening our understanding and applicability of fatherhood. We're at a very weird political space in America. But if Republicans love their children, if Democrats love their children, if the non-political love their children, you would hope that they could, that we could all start at that basic level, the love of our children, and do whatever it takes, provide the supports that need to be present for the best health and the best outcomes for our children. Providing maternal support is going to lead to the best outcomes for our children. Providing child supports is going to be to the best interest of our children. But providing paternal support and providing child care support is also going to be to the best interest of our children, regardless of what our political ideologies or leanings happen to be.
The National Center for Fathering says that a family can be a viable form of a micro-democracy. I wonder what you think about this. How can fathers be a role model for democracy in their household?
So democracy is about sharing power.
Mm-hmm.
Democracy is about learning how to equitably share, equitably manage scarce resources. Democracy is about respecting voices, including dissenting voices. Democracy is about allowing the stories and respecting the stories of all. And fathers and mothers, but in this case we're talking about fathers, play a crucial role in modeling that for their children. So not just in the way that they interact with their spouses, but the way they also respect their own selves, the potentially self-sabotaging behaviors that they might engage, and also in recognizing the way children show up in families and respecting the views, values, stories of children, and allowing for children to have that voice in their families as well. We're not saying that the child should rule the family, but the child is a human being and is learning their voice and should be allowed space to engage that voice. But of course, it means that in the parents, and in this case, fathers, need to create space for that to happen and also model that for their children.
We're going to turn now to your work in the podcast space and giving voice to fathers. And you have an upcoming new project that you're working on, and you talk about it as on a grassroots level, connecting with fathers. What are you working on in future projects?
So that's something happened this morning that has excited me even more about this project. So we have the Black Fathers Pulse podcast coming up very soon. I'm getting ready to launch it. We're putting some final touches on it. We have a number of episodes already recorded, including episodes with a father from Trinidad and Tobago, who's sharing his application of Montessori principles to homeschooling his child and sharing that with other men in Trinidad and Tobago. We have others from the U.S., including one of my friends, a grad student, who's sharing his approach to parenting his 3-year-old son and his 17-year-old daughter, and how that's different. So we're connecting to the stories of men on the ground. Yes, we'll bring in all of these other stories of authors and researchers and whatnot, but we want to, at the core of it, connect to those day-to-day stories so that every father, Black and non-Black, could see themselves, and including mothers, could see themselves in those stories.
Alvin Thomas, thank you for your research. Thank you so much for joining us.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Kate, for having me.
That is Alvin Thomas, a clinical psychologist and an associate professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UW-Madison. Thomas hosts the Black Fatherhood podcast with conversations with Black authors, artists, and scholars on issues affecting Black fathers.